to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. Tonight's presenter is Megan Krieger. She's the inaugural Director of Creative Services for Kansas City, Missouri. She's going to talk about her anticipation, expectations, and experiences in the Kansas City creative scene. This program was recorded on Sunday, December the 13th, at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Kansas City, Missouri. Tonight's program follows its usual format. It will be a presentation from Megan Krieger to start us off for about the first 40 minutes or so. We'll take a short break, and then we'll air a segment that has questions from the audience. So let's begin at the beginning, shall we?
Good morning. Well, it looks like we may have had a slightly rain-dampened moment here this morning, but at least it is snow, right? The 4 feet of snow out there with all that rain, or ice, correct. Well, good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Mullins, member of the Forum Committee. I see mostly familiar faces out here, but as you will know, the Forum is a long-standing opportunity for the discussion platform of significant issues, and particularly ones that have moral and ethical implications. Last week, if you were here, we heard from the city manager, Troy Schulte, talking about his pretty broad perspective, and this week we have Megan Krieger. Megan has only been in Kansas City for a year. I just learned that she does have family in the area, her husband and extended family, so she's not here entirely by accident, and I can now safely assume that she's not looking for a job in New York City, which may not be true, but I can hold that thought. So, Megan does come to us by way of a similar job for 4 years in Austin, Texas. Those of you who follow the scene as far as being a modern city, Austin is certainly one of the places that gets a lot of attention. It was one of the second round of Google Fiber Cities. And it obviously presents some contrast between Kansas City and its situation in Texas. So hopefully we'll hear some about that. So Megan's going to talk about her first year's worth of experience here in Kansas City. And without further ado, I'll turn it over to her.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill. Good morning, everyone. How is everyone? Great. I understand that this will be 30 minutes, and then the exciting part, too, is that questions and answers, and I will try to stay on time because I'm looking forward to speaking more to you all. I want to thank Bill for having me here. And I was invited to talk about kind of my own observations and experiences, my personal anticipations. My background, just briefly, on a very personal level, my parents were both musicians. My mother was an opera singer. My dad was a jazz musician. And they struggled. And so I was threatened with my life if I were to go into music. So instead, I studied visual arts and went on to study art history, studio art. My mother later became a music educator. And my dad, a children's librarian for the next 30 years. I dabbled a bit in art conservation and then really landed on my love, which is art education, with a thesis that focused on how does public art, what is the success of public art as it relates to public engagement? How much does it reflect community? How much was community involved in the creation of it? And how does it continue to resonate with community? So I was with the City of Austin for 18 years, managing the public art program for 14 of that, and then went on to oversee the larger cultural affairs division as part of the Economic Development Department. For 10 years. What's really beautiful here is that it's a new position, the Office of Arts and Culture Creative Services, because it's housed in the city manager's office, because it's not solely focused on economic development, although we recognize the trickle-down benefit of having a strong economy. It's also recognizing the personal connection and the value of the arts to our own lives and to our community. So, you all may already be familiar, in 2013, City Council adopted the Arts Convergence Plan. It was the first recommendation of the plan to establish the office because they had to have somebody, boots on the ground, to actually implement the plan, which is the 10-year plan. So it serves as the roadmap. And so the office was established to lead the city's cultural development and activate City Hall's role as an important supporter and advocate for the arts. So the intent of the office will be looking at policies and programs that will strengthen not only the creative sector, but to ensure equitable access to the arts to all of our residents. Actually go back one, please. So we're going to figure out our timing here. Let's stay there, and then I'll have my rhythm down. So I believe that establishing this plan really makes a strong statement that arts are for everyone and that everyone can take part in the cultural development of this city. This is a community plan, and I have to stress that it's not the city that's going to be implementing this. It's in partnership with agencies, with institutions, with individuals, and with neighborhoods. To the credit of the mayor, Mayor James, and tireless and unwavering support by arts and civic leaders, the process, in my opinion, of the plan was incredibly inclusive with impressive citizen engagement, and it resulted in the vision over the next 10 years. Over 3,600 people participated in the course of 18 months, 45 community convenings with over 500 individuals, 70 interviews with local leaders, and an online community survey drawing over 1,400 citizen responses. And so what we learned in this, according to the citizen survey result, was that 87% either fully wanted government to support the arts or play a major role in the city's cultural development. Priorities of the community are to incorporate arts-based strategies. Here are the priorities that came back. Neighborhood revitalization. Making arts education accessible to everyone, meaning young and old. Increasing municipal funding for professional artists and arts organizations, and activating arts and culture in neighborhoods. Many of you may have been involved in other city planning efforts. This plan also supports the Kansas City Comprehensive Plan, which recognizes how arts development can play a role in the economic vitality of the city. And it also references the Kansas City Greater Downtown Area Plan, which calls for expansion of the 1% for art to catalyze the construction of new features and amenities to reinforce the district as a lively, creative place. And again, moving these priorities forward will require city and community working in tandem to take action in areas of need and opportunity. So this is probably a working mission and always open to feedback because it has to respond to resident community priorities. But the mission of the office is to serve, first and foremost, the residents of Kansas City by bolstering and catalyzing arts, culture, and creativity, and by leveraging the arts for economic development, neighborhood revitalization, and cultural vitality for its citizens. We believe that by doing this, we can increase the jobs in the creative sector, we can strengthen Kansas City's communities and cultural identity, we can develop education and lifelong learning in the arts, and of course we can promote the city as the heart of America's creative crossroads and a dynamic destination for national and international visitors. To best implement this plan, I've come up with a framework of 5 key priority areas that focus on arts, culture, and creativity for economic growth, educational advancement, and improved quality of life. This is actually in line with, serendipitously, with the 2012 National Governors Association report called The New Engines of Growth, 5 Roles for Arts, Culture, and Design that can compel economic solutions in 5 ways. And they are right in line with what I've proposed here, which is to create a fast-growth dynamic industry cluster, help mature industries become more competitive, deliver a better prepared workforce, provide the critical ingredients for innovative places, and catalyze community revitalization. And so what I've done is taken the 10 priorities and the goals that were outlined by the community in the Arts Convergence Plan and aligned them with each of those five. Now, that's very hard to see, but we can certainly provide access to the plan. But they talk about what I've been saying, leadership and funding for the arts, looking at the public art program and how can that better serve our city, arts education, arts and culture in neighborhoods, so you get kind of how or what the priorities are and then how those align with the office. So who is a creative? For the purpose of our office, creatives can be described as organizations, individuals, and companies who provide products and services originating in artistic, cultural, creative, or aesthetic content. Cities all over the country are trying to self-define, and rightly so, who their creative industries are, and that is largely based on who lives in our city, and what are their talents, and what is our city assets that we build off of that and we help grow and sustain. And so while we don't have an inventory necessarily of everyone who lives in the city, there are several economic impact studies that help reveal kind of who lives here and who helps us in our strengths. And because of this national conversation around creative industries and how is that defined, economic development researchers and policymakers have come to identify and recognize the role of creative enterprises and creative workers as significant to the local and regional economies. So why do arts matter to cities? The national campaign, if you haven't heard it yet, is that arts mean business. A few decades ago, national arts and civic leaders joined forces with economic analysts to develop metrics around the arts, around a healthy and vibrant economy, borrowing language related to job creation, tax revenues, and national spending, certainly raising the awareness that arts and culture are worthy of investment. There's also a better understanding of the impact of arts and culture on the national economy. And in fact, just this year, the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis with the National Endowment for the Arts released their second annual report measuring that the arts and culture sector contribution to the U.S. gross domestic product represented 4.3% or almost $700 billion of the GDP. It's a higher percentage than tourism, than transportation, and construction. And it was the first time that at the national level they recognized the significance of the arts. So I've also heard that a statistic that about 50% of audiences are bored with statistics, and so I will run through these fairly quickly. So with the first priority being the creative sector, the focus here is growing and sustaining and attracting the creative sector in our city and positioning us as a city to be proactive in stimulating the growth in the creative economy. And the way I like to think of it is that it's a way of diversifying the city's larger economic portfolio. It's not the only thing, but it's certainly a contributing factor. And our own regional data that came from the Arts and Economic Prosperity Study from the National Americans for the Arts, and in fact it was our regional Arts KC that administers this study every 5 years, is that we learned that it's home to 218 exhibition spaces, 359 arts-related businesses and creative industries, and these account for 4.2% share of all business. And what's interesting is that is compared with a 2.9% of the national average. So that shows that Kansas City really shines when it comes to local, creative, and authentic voice with our community. Click. We also know that there are over 60 performing arts venues, 250 arts organizations generating a quarter of a billion, that's with a B, in economic activity annually. And we learned that in Kansas City metro area, nonprofits, arts and culture organizations alone are a $273 million industry supporting over 8,300 full-time jobs and generating $22 million in local and state government revenue. And also in that report, we learned that the Performing Arts Center alone was home to over 300 performances last year. And one more bit from the study, if you can move forward one more. This was really impressive to me. So weighted for population and percent of people attending, many in Kansas City participate in the arts. The Kansas City metro region ranked third highest in the country and scored 20% higher than the national average for local participation in arts and cultural activities. That's higher than the Twin Cities, and that's higher than New York City. And from a separate report, over the last 10 years, we've seen an increase of 35% of creative individuals that have moved to Kansas City. So we are an attractive and welcoming and creative city. To be more specific, and I'm throwing this in because over the past year we have had the great pleasure of making some advances with some programs. So I wanted to talk specifically about three examples of how the creative sector creates jobs and stimulates the business economy. One, the creative sector hires local business. For example, business and film have a great reciprocal relationship. From hiring local services and products to product placement in the film, productions often rely on local business like lodging, accountants, advertisers, caterers, construction contractors, editors, electricians. The list goes on and on. That's in addition to the creative occupations. And then conversely, secondly, businesses often hire the creative sector. For example, hiring theater professionals to teach customer service skills. I worked with the Omni Hotel, actually several years ago, and they hired a local theater company to help with learning the lessons of patience and tolerance through acting when it seemed impossible to be nice to the customer on the other side of the counter. They greatly benefited from that exercise. And then third, arts are exportable. Marketing Kansas City's brand as a cultural center is also accomplished by exporting our talents to other parts of the country to strengthen our local economy. The example here that I like to use is the Kansas City Repertory Theater, where they're using new work to brand Kansas City as a creative community. A production called The Tallest Tree in the Forest, I don't know if any of you all had a chance to see it. It was happened before I arrived. It did its world premiere in September of 2013 at the Kansas City Rep Theater in downtown. Audiences in Kansas City had a significant hand in developing the final production, and alterations were made to the production every day based on audience responses. The final production world premiered in Kansas City and went on to La Jolla, California, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., and New York City, with each program listing that the world premiere happened here in Kansas City. So more and more theaters locally here are looking at doing new works and figuring out how to export them, and that's one of the resources that my office can help provide. So this just shows a quick little diagram about how the industry cluster will create jobs and businesses, can enhance competitiveness of other businesses, and be an important asset to attract and retain talent and increase the vitality and quality of life throughout the region. So the second area of focus is arts marketing, cultural tourism. How do we better connect with residents and our community with the arts, increasing access, but then also showcasing Kansas City as a destination for cultural tourism. Cultural tourism refers to travel directed toward experiencing the arts, heritage, and special character of a place. It's known now through the Travel Industry Association of America that cultural tourism is one of the fastest growing segments of the tourism industries, attracting visitors who tend to stay longer, spend more money, and travel in the off-season compared to the average U.S. traveler. Cultural travelers tend to put more money back into the community, spending on an average of $166 more than other types of travelers. And that over 70% of travelers visited one or more of the cultural heritage sites, such as state, local, or national parks, art galleries, museums, concerts, plays, musicals, or an ethnic or ecological heritage site. Many visitors say they extend their stay because of a cultural and heritage activity. Another example is the Kansas City Symphony, who sold tickets just last year to customers from all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and 9 foreign countries. So they are definitely having a huge impact. And then the Conference of the National Council on Education for the Ceramic Arts will be celebrating their 50th anniversary here in Kansas City in March of 2016, bringing over 5,000 visitors. And the American Choral Directors Association has booked 12,000 rooms for its 2019 convention, so it's certainly a great convention destination. But the main goal of cultural tourism is really, and the principal objective, is collaborating with local organizations and the public to develop sustainable economies. Cultural districts, for example, through coordinated branding and marketing, have an ability to draw a significant number of visitors to a place. Cultural districts are well recognized as with a label, with a product, with a marketing strategy that has a high concentration of cultural facilities. It serves as an anchor for a city that helps with the attraction and a robust economic activity. So this diagram, which you may not be able to see, it represents the cultural tourism ecosystem, which promotes the authentic character of a city created by local artists, creative businesses, and institutional programming. And it puts Kansas City at a global competitive advantage by marketing our authentic experience of place. We know culture is the lifeblood of our cities. It's a major reason why people gravitate to them to live, to work, to visit. As the urban population increases, so does the impact and importance of culture in our lives and to be able to connect with creativity. It's a way of personal expression and individual identity and voice. So partnering with the local arts can help to draw that tourist attraction with that authentic voice. This is, again, from a national study that dinner, for example, and a show go hand in hand. Attendance at arts events generate income for local business, which are restaurants, parking garages, hotels, retail stores. And it translates to about $74 billion in valuable revenue to our own local merchants and communities. Next. While the ratio of local to non-local attendees is different in every community, for the most part, a national sample revealed that approximately 32% of attendees traveled from outside the county. So where maybe almost 70% are local, there's room for improvement. So there's lots of opportunity to attract new audiences. And the data shows that non-local attendees spend twice as much as local attendees. So again, more opportunity. Next. So in March of 2015, our office partnered with Visit KC, which is the convention and tourism agency. And we conducted a cultural tourism survey. It was one of the first things I did when I landed. It was sort of my way of inventorying and getting a sense of who was here and what everyone was doing and what the needs were. Our preliminary findings found that we have a very engaged and active arts community. We heard from over 35% of the creative community, which is a terrific step in bolstering our public-private partnership. We also learned that there are few barriers to access, that 75% of our organizations offer free or low-cost programming options. And we found out that there's something for everyone, from architecture and design to culinary arts, theater, music, and museums, an enormous variety of artistic and cultural disciplines represented here in Kansas City. And among the highest concentrations were visual arts, music, film, multimedia, photography, theater, and dance. And lastly, we recognize that all are welcome. Cultural organizations program for audiences of all ages and backgrounds. And in addition to adults, we saw a pretty significant or a large percentage serving directly and significantly serving families, seniors, and students, all in the 70% range, LGBT, and then also at 61%, and then more than half of them hosting tour groups. However, there is a desire for them to increase the access to the arts, and 78% of those organizations expressed a need to better connect with community. So over the next few months, we'll be working with our marketing partners and Visit KC to develop programs in response to these needs. Next. And my personal priority is to work with community to highlight the unique character of Kansas City. Recently in April, and I'll mention this later, City Council transferred administration of the Neighborhood Tourist Development Fund to our office, which, if you're not familiar with it, it comes from a state mandate. It's a collection of hotel tax that the city then reinvests to grow our tourism tax. And so we contract with over 200 nonprofit arts organizations to support their productions and their marketing, broad marketing. We consider these organizations to be our partners, so we can work together to collectively promote not only their product, but our city, and engage our visitors. And this, in turn, respects our authenticity and engenders community pride as a way of life. The third priority, creative learning, and I'll just run through this. So we know that we found out from the Arts Convergence Plan that residents want to see over the next 5 to 10 years, almost two-thirds wanted to see more arts education in schools as a top priority, and similar for lifelong learning for adults. So how do we help make that connection? My opinion is, in order to move these recommendations forward, cities and school districts have to recognize the mutual benefit of educating the whole child, preparing them for the creative skills needed for the 21st century, such as problem solving, communication, critical thinking. And very recently, there's a national conversation around, of course, you're maybe familiar with STEM, science, technology, engineering, math. I think there's a bill that's been put forward to actually introduce the A for STEAM for the purposes of arts-integrated strategies that help with teaching the STEM curriculum. I think it's important, though, to recognize that that's a capital A and that it's imperative that we also focus on sequential fine arts learning because that's also a career path for many who choose the creative path. So moving on, because it looks like we have just a few more minutes left. Next, the fourth priority is you may have seen urban infrastructure, public spaces. Few cities have in their plans placemaking attributes such as arts venues, public spaces, mixed land use in terms of public support, and yet these attributes motivate creative people and innovation-based companies that rely on these aesthetic places to stay and grow in the area. My expertise in public art, I truly believe that integrating arts into streetscapes, they can be functional amenities, enhancements, helped create that interesting place and capitalize on a neighborhood's distinctiveness of a place. Works can reveal and honor the history of an area, activate new spaces for communities to come together. The top, that's an Art in the Loop. I think they're in their third or fourth year of commissioning temporary projects for people to come together in Oppenstein Park, which also has a public permanent installation by artist Laura DeAngelis called, and she worked with Davidson Architecture and Urban Design, called Star Disc, which visitors can press a button to reveal the position of more than 450 stars directly overhead. It can reveal the value of a community. On the bottom left, you'll see the bridge that was done by El Dorado. Again, it happened before I arrived, but I was really impressed in the fact that the whole intention was to connect on either side of Truce, and so they deliberately built the bridge to accommodate, well, the pedestrian, and installed the glass panels to indicate communication and transparency and coming together of communities across the bridge. Next. In fact, I'm going to skip this, if you can move forward. And the last one is community development, which addresses the fourth goal of the plan, enhancing arts and cultural opportunities in neighborhoods. Art in community development. This is a growing field. It's integrating arts into community development strategies, and it's receiving a lot of attention nationally. Artists and nonprofits often work in the public realm around community welfare for social profit, such as health, beautification of infrastructure and parks, youth development, and creative workforce development. When arts are coupled with traditional sectors, I believe that creativity, that there is much potential benefit for boosting the community, and they touch the community at crucial leverage points. The term creative placemaking has been around for about a decade, but it's starting to take hold with the non-arts creative sector. And so fairly recently, I joined forces with the Greater Kansas City LISC and with the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City to bring together banks, lenders, foundations, community leaders, arts organizations to talk about a purposeful arts integration into community planning and development. The increasing support, particularly on the national level, is exciting as it emphasizes the unique role of artists and the importance of arts in creating sustainable changes. The picture you're seeing here, you all may be familiar with it, is called Lots of Love, that that several artists led by Sean Starwitz worked with Ivan Neighborhood Council Healthy Kids Initiative to create, to transform vacant land into gathering places. And every neighborhood is going to have different needs, different challenges, and it doesn't happen overnight, but it is the start of a conversation that helps to develop a place creatively. And I'm going to skip this. I might be able to talk about it in our Q&A. One more click, if you will. This is just a snapshot of the accomplishments to date in the first 6 months. Earlier in the year, we, thinking about support of the creative sector, we launched a pilot microloan for artists program. It was in partnership with Justine Peterson, leveraging SBA dollars. These are new dollars in Kansas City that can help close the gap of finances that aren't necessarily being met by other financial resources such as grants, which is the primary resource for artists, or crowdsourcing, which is our friends and families. It was a very successful program. We also, at that time, did an artist business needs survey, learned a lot about what the borrowing capacity was and what they needed funding for. And so, actually, next month, we will be announcing our official microloan program of a $250,000 loan pool, all leveraged by a nonprofit lender. And in that, I have to say that the network of the purpose is not the microloan program, but it's building a network of support, not only for artists, but arts organizations who serve these artists. And so we are bringing in, as our partners, various arts organizations like Charlotte Street, Artists Inc., Maddie Rhodes, the African American Alliance, Vine Street Studio. We have some banks, we have some economic development corporations, we have the EDC, all coming together to continue the conversation to make sure that we are meeting the needs of our creative community. Let's see, and we've already, so NTDF, I've already mentioned, we're well on our way. We had three workshops, and we will continue to do so, and we had some focus groups of our organizations that produce events to understand where are room for improvement, what's working, what's not. And so the NTDF committee, which is appointed by mayor and council, will be having a retreat, and I anticipate some process changes that will certainly move toward more equitable and transparent funding allocation of what is, I think, up to $1.4 million, and I anticipate will only grow as tourism increases in our city. I think that's probably it. I think I've touched on most of those. If you could go on to the next one. And then this is just horizons, things that we'll be looking at over the next 5 years to implement. So I think that's
it. You're listening to Megan Krieger talk about her experiences and her insights into Kansas City's creative scene since she's just recently arrived here. So we get kind of an objective perspective of what we're all about here in the Kansas City arts scene. This is the All Souls Forum. We're going to take a break. We owe you some messages. We will be back with questions from the audience. You're listening to Megan Krieger, who is the Director of Creative Services for the City of Kansas City, Missouri. We'll be right back after these messages.
As a church, we're in the process of having a capital campaign to permit doing some needed improvements to the building, some renovations, small amount of additions. And in the process of doing this, one of the questions is, what happens with art inside the building? Now, we already have a very strong music program. In terms of art, we have usually it's a rotating gallery in our lobby. We have some permanent art fixtures. Do you have any suggestions of ways that churches might be involved with helping support the various arts?
And if I could just ask, the capital campaign was for which building? It was for this one. Okay. And the question is, how can churches be involved in supporting the arts? Is that beyond the capital campaign, or is that specifically for this project that you're asking about?
Just as a part of what is mainly building renovation.
Yes, yes. So there are many, many ways. I mean, a good guide is to look at a small percentage, say 1%, that if you want truly meaningful work that is reflective of the values of your space, you would bring an artist in like any other profession, along with the architect, along with the engineers, and they would be part of the problem solving and solutions that could manifest in so many different ways. It could be a sculpture, it could be architectural enhancements, artisan work that's built in, you know, if there are members here of the church that could contribute. The artist plays a role in that long-range planning on how to build in the arts. So there are artists who work in the planning realm that can serve in that capacity so that it's laid out the many and numerous ways arts could be reflected as part of the capital campaign and the renovation. Did I answer your question? Okay.
Hi, my name is Anita. I was paying particular attention. I was looking for inclusion from the east side or inclusion to the east side, you know. And, you know, I saw a lot of white faces in those slides, and I didn't see too many African Americans. And I know they are culturally, in need of inclusion and very artistic if we could tap into it. What's being done about, you know, really specifically? It can't be general. I'm thinking specific inclusion, reaching out to the potential that's on the east side to help, you know, bring that in.
Yes. So that, and it probably wasn't stressed enough that is my primary focus, because as I was asked to come in to share my observations, I think number one is there's a thriving arts community. Two, there's a disconnect with municipal policy that is happening that I can help bridge a gap with needs all over the city. But then there's also a huge disparity of wealth and poverty, and there are certainly numerous artists on the east side who deserve and need access to the same resources. I mentioned the microloan for artists. While loans may not be hitting a need at that moment, I'm talking about a larger ecosystem where I've brought in the African American arts service organizations, the Hispanic Economic Development Corporation continue to reach out, because it's not an inclusive or exclusive group. But the ecosystem is, how do you build your own prosperity? So we had, I was very pleased when we had our financial resources for artists and inviting these minority arts organizations as our partners to really further our reach. And we had a nice, we can always do better, but a good percentage of minorities in the room. So it starts with building your own prosperity, and that may mean credit building. That may mean then graduating to a microloan. That means understanding how you want to grow your business, but then eventually into traditional bank loans. And so ideally I'm having institutions, I'm learning myself the resources that are on the ground, and there are significant ones. I just went to the KC Source Link to understand the numerous business development service organizations. But what I want to say, that was a specific program, kind of tapping my feet in to see how we can better serve minority organizations and artists. But most recently, I have to tell you, was truly exciting. I helped to coordinate, but I won't take sole credit, but the Nelson Atkins Museum is doing the Hale Woodruff mural exhibition. There are family members of Hale Woodruff, who is an African-American muralist, here in Kansas City, and so we coordinated a family exhibition of their works and collection at the American Jazz Museum through the works of Sonny Ruffin, who's the curator, also brought in the Black Archives, put together a panel one evening to talk about collaboration, and everyone was very pleased with how this had come about, but really the question was, how do we continue this? And so it's somewhat under the radar, but we have started convening informally to understand how can this evolve. But it is members of a lot of the organizations on the east side to talk specifically around community development and those areas of interest, how we collaborate and specifically talk about race-based issues. So I told them I'm not the one to lead this, but I'm certainly one that can help bring a forum together where those conversations can happen. And we've been meeting now for the past 3 months. We're still figuring out how we all come together and agree on a mission statement that then we can start bringing people in to talk about some of these really difficult conversations. We're calling it the Collaborative, is what the group is called. So if you hear about it, that's what we're doing.
I'm particularly interested in hearing from you more about how the literary arts get included in the community interests and needs. They're not as splashy as a symphony or an exhibition or a play, and yet there would not be a play or a movie if there were not first a story or a script. I happen to serve on the board of the Kansas City, the Writer's Place, which has been in existence since at least 92. And, you know, we serve youth, we serve veterans, we serve writers of all stripes, but I think we probably become invisible when people think about the arts, which usually ends up being visual or performing. So as you look at the cultural arts, and particularly one of your priorities, creative learning, how do you see the literary arts being supported, advanced, involved in the cultural life of Kansas City?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes, literary is very much a part of the creative community. And I did have the pleasure of meeting with the executive director of the Writer's Place, so we had some interesting ideas that I'm going to write down before I forget. For example, understanding what the national resources are that we can bring to Kansas City that showcase our own literary talents, Scholastic Arts and Writing Awards. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but I've met with them, and I'm looking for a local organization, local host, that can conduct or at least bring those writings together to submit for competition. We're talking about a poet laureate for the city through the Writer's Place. A lot of these projects, though, again, come from the creatives. So it's less about me developing programs and more about me supporting ideas that the community has. So I was approached by two organizations that have come together, which is the Writer's Place. I think informally it was more one of their poets, and a brand new photographers organization. What they're interested in doing is pairing photography and writings in a public venue, and so I am shepherding that process through the Parks Department. There's a process for vetting and understand, you know, safety, making sure that whatever is installed is appropriate for the site. And so we're right now working with those organizations to see how to bring their work into the public realm. And it's a very exciting project. I'd like for this to be a pilot that then we can continue to grow. And then the other thing, too, is looking at how we work with, for example, film productions that come into the city. And I'm not going to say use the word incentivizing, but we have a film office now with Visit KC who touches all of the productions. And how do we encourage them to use our local writers and use, again, our local businesses? And so we are having that conversation right now, thinking about getting film, TV commercial producers to come and talk about how to market and how to touch film production, for example. So there's a few ideas. But thank you for your comment, because I always love to be reminded, too, that there's always more that we could do.
An asset that you may not have thought of is, in fact, the federal government. presence here in Kansas City, because over, I think it, probably a dozen federal agencies have regional headquarters here, and do most of them somewhere actually have some money for arts in their budgets, particularly if they're doing renovations. And so I'm hoping perhaps that you, during your tenure, will make that connection with, say, the Federal Executive Board. Be happy to give you a connection.
I would love that. Thank you.
We've heard a lot, of talk about moving forward and being modern and all that, but I think there is also the question of tension, and particularly the tension between the what I would call the development community, we're seeing that in the form of petitions regarding hotels and trolleys and various and sundry other things. And as you're aware, we just went through an exercise over the last year with the Nelson Atkins sort of leading the way on a cultural center in this area. People in this community were part of that. There is concern, particularly in Midtown here, about gentrification. And so I guess I'd be interested in what you might have to say about these tensions. I certainly heard you say some things that to me would involve bringing the right people to the table, but I can imagine larger circles. So how do we, what's the end in mind? Did they get there in Austin in terms of public engagement that looks a lot like arts convergence over and over and over again, beyond the developers deciding what we want and then coming to try and get us to agree with it? And you can dodge any part of that question.
I think that's a much bigger conversation. I think a conversation where, you know, I'd love more back and forth on that, because I certainly can't address the full tension. I can say specifically around, and I don't know, I'm not even familiar with the tension, frankly. So I guess because my perspective is, one, I think we all agree that we all want to know what comes into our neighborhood early. We want to be a part of the voice of what's decided. I think that's, you know, but then there are certain rights that people, I don't want to get into that. In terms of having them participate in the voice of what's valued in a community, in Austin, well known for being arts and culture, they would often want to voluntarily want to roll out the red carpet with some kind of commission or some kind of support of the arts. I'm finding that even more so here. Developers have brought me in to talk about more process of inclusion of arts in their development. I actually would love to have this conversation, but I'm feeling a little stuck as to exactly where to take this.
Perfectly.
Okay.
Rather you say that than after a year saying you got it all figured out.
No. Oh, but you did mention gentrification, and that's big. So, yes. So I've recently, I don't know if you're familiar with Ann Markison, who coined the term creative placemaking several decades ago. And in fact, just this year, there was a debate between Ann Markison and Roberto Bedoya, who runs the Tucson Pima Council in Arizona. And the debate was, does creative placemaking assume gentrification? In fact, she has a very interesting report that I don't necessarily agree with, but she does outline some tools for economic development strategies and tools to avoid displacement of those who have been in the neighborhood, who want to remain in the neighborhood. What I love about what Roberto is introducing in the conversation is that creative placemaking doesn't necessarily have to be about improving the built environment, which inevitably talks about property taxes and increasing market values. It's about a sense of belonging. So what he's doing is called PLACE, if you want to look it up. It's acronym PLACE, people, land, arts, community, and I've lost the E, but you can find it. And again, it's, what is that? Does somebody know the E? It's about bringing community together and having any improvements in a neighborhood come organically, so that there sets a tone for anyone who does come in to want to be part of that same sense of community.
That would be
that. Yeah,
sure.
That would be my start.
We have time for one more question.
Okay.
In my perspective, in our society, we have monetized everything. And one of the places I'm very worried is in education, particularly public education. I know either yesterday or Friday, the president signed a new education bill replacing No Child Left Behind. I guess the Republicans decided they could blame No Child Left Behind on the president, so they weren't worried about doing away with that, as that was George W. Bush's idea. But how does your office... Have you been working, I'm assuming you're working with the public education in the Kansas City area to see about, because I firmly believe in arts education in school.
Yes, thank you. I came in with a kind of a big head about how that was going to happen, just because I'd had some great success in my former city with one school district, and the support from the Kennedy Center's Any Given Child Award, which required the city and the school district to partner, and it resulted in that I won't go into, I'd be happy to talk about it another time. So I had this big inflated idea that I could kind of do a similar thing, and went to the Kansas City, Missouri, one of 15 in the city, to talk about this idea of getting a grant to, at the very baseline, audit what's already happening in schools, because so much of it is one-offs. If there's an artist being brought in, it's because they know the specialist, or they know the general classroom teacher, or they know the principal. And what I was interested in is an audit to understand where the gaps are, what's happening. The school district actually met me with... They were favorable to the idea because they understood that it benchmarked them against other cities. They always want to know how they're doing. Another focus was, they shared with me, they're in the middle of their strategic planning, which comes after the facilities planning, and how talking about our community nonprofit arts organizations as community arts partners in the schools could be beneficial as part of their planning process in defining roles of community within the school district. I was hot and ready to go. I've been here now a year. I recognize I still would prioritize that school district, but just because that could be an amazing success story in how we integrate. Again, this would be an arts-based strategy that increases attraction of families back to schools. I saw it in Austin with a middle school where there was mass exodus. We piloted it, and within the next year, families were attracted, kids were engaged, and they were engaged in all the subjects because arts were being used as a strategy. Where we are today, and there's still a possibility of going for a federal grant with the Kennedy Center, but there's other opportunities. We know that there could be consultants who could help us with an audit. There's a new alliance called the STEAM Alliance, which is the State Arts Education Council, numerous state organizations, local organizations. We're coming together cross state line to talk about arts integration. And so those conversations are happening, and I actually, if you looked in my looking forward, an inventory of our local assets and resources that we could reach out to families and say, here's an opportunity that's maybe a low-cost after-school creative learning opportunity to then use the same resource to start working with the schools. But until there's a new superintendent, I think things are kind of on hold. I'd love to be, frankly, if anyone has access to this for me, is to get more engaged in that strategic planning process. That would be my dream. So.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Director of Creative Services for Kansas City, Missouri, Megan Krieger. And we heard a lot about her impressions of Kansas City, her first impressions since she's just here from Austin, Texas. This program was recorded on Sunday, December the 13th at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church at 4501 Walnut Street in Kansas City, Missouri. This program is produced and edited for broadcast each week by Barry Lee. The music you hear at the beginning and end of each show is created, performed, and recorded and written by Kansas City musician Fred Potter. Thanks to Rita Norton and the staff at All Souls for their help each week in producing this program. You can find All Souls Forum in podcast form on KKFI's website at www.kkfi.org. We have a great number of uploaded podcasts for your enjoyment. You can download them or stream them however you wish to encounter them. Tune in again next week for another All Souls Forum, right here, same time, same place on KKFI. See you next time.